Another massive landslide in Glacier Bay is the talk of the science world, and breakthroughs in grizzly behaviors and genetics. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. A massive landslide in Glacier Bay National Park more than a week ago is exciting scientists around the world for the way it was detected, the images of the slide, and the sheer magnitude of it. It's also near a similar slide that occurred in 2012 on Mount Lituya. Scientists from NASA, the U.S. Geological Survey, and elsewhere are calling the slide at Mount La Perusa the biggest in the world in the last 4 years and possibly the largest ever recorded in Alaska. A group of scientists first detected the slide after it happened on February 16th. Colin Stark is a research professor with the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University. Stark and his colleagues developed a technique, funded by the National Science Foundation, to identify massive landslides using global seismic information. Stark said when the La Perusa landslide showed up among their data, they knew something unusual had taken place.
Last Sunday, I was watching I checked the catalog that he generates every day, and I spotted an event that we detected but wasn't detected by the USGS or by an agency in Germany or the Alaska Earthquake Information Center. And when that happens, it's kind of a big red flag. It sort of says, ooh, this could be an anomalous event.
Stark and his colleagues try to identify long period waves in their analysis. Short period waves are the kind that normally occur in earthquakes, but longer waves can show a slower surface movement that might indicate a landslide. Stark enlisted help from NASA to get an Earth observation satellite to pass over the area. He also put out the word to other scientists, hoping as the news spread, access to satellite imagery would also grow. After reading about the seismic event on a landslide blog, a geology enthusiast reached out to Haynes pilot Drake Olson, who had located the Lituya slide. This time, there wasn't yet an exact location, just word that a massive slide had likely occurred somewhere in the Glacier Bay region. But that wasn't quite enough information to get Olson up in his plane.
You just don't go fly 150 miles round trip just for the fun of it. It's too expensive.
But the next day he called a Canadian scientist interested in the Lituya slide. Poring over the data, he and Olson decided the slide had to have occurred somewhere near Bradley Glacier. Olson was still lukewarm about going on a landslide goose chase, but he took to the skies, and on the southern end of the Fairweather Range, he spotted the slide.
As I climbed up out of Haynes, and there was a cloud layer in Glacier Bay, I was going, you know, I got a lot of work to do. I shouldn't be going off and doing this. This is like a needle in a haystack. I was just generally perusing everything, and then I looked ahead and went, yeah, there it was. Stuck out like a sore thumb.
Scientists estimate the breakaway from the mountain had started at just under 9,000 feet. Olson landed near the terminus at about 3,700 feet. The debris field is estimated to be almost 5 miles long, with an estimated 68 million metric tons of debris. For comparison, the Lituya slide released less than a third of that. Olson skied the area to take photos, at least until he noticed the mountain and debris was still emitting small movements and sounds.
I put my skis on. I did a kind of a quick analysis of the snowpack right there where the airplane was just to make sure things were reasonable. And then I hiked all around in on the thing. And so when I got up to the icefall, I started approaching it. Wouldn't you know that the thing had a pretty good release, big thundering rumble, and I hightailed it out of there.
Stark says it's unlikely Olson was in danger. Most of the activity took place at the mountain when it broke away. The debris field is so large because it was moving across ice and spread out, he said.
It had nothing to worry about at that point because most of that was sliding over ice. Only the very initial part of the landslide was very, very steep, dropping about 1,000 meters, something like that. And that's what makes the forces that make the seismic waves that we detected, not the sliding over ice.
Olson returned the next day with a local mountaineer to explore the area more.
We went out and hiked all through it, all around it, all in it, and we were like kids in a candy store. It is so fascinating.
Stark said most massive slide events like these happen in Alaska than anywhere else in the world. And more happen than even scientists realize, he said. That's because most go undetected and unseen. But the new technique used to find this slide will hopefully help notify scientists when other massive landslides occur. Stark said he can even use the analysis to go back through his data to identify slides that have occurred in years previous. Doing that, he's already identified a massive slide that he says took place in 1997 near Mount McKinley. As for the cause of these slide events, Stark says that's harder to determine. He says most slides like La Tuya and La Perouse happen on south-facing slopes and often in the summer. That gives him a small clue into a possible underlying cause.
One thing I'm a little hesitant about sort of disseminating too much at this point, but a lot of the events in Alaska have been south-facing warm summer events. So there's a hint, and it's only a hint, that there might be some sort of rock permafrost thawing related, slowly, steadily losing permafrost ice, and that affecting the stability of the slopes.
Seismologists with the Alaska Earthquake Center said once they heard about the landslide, they were able to go back and look for long-period waves and found the event in their data. It was the equivalent of a 2.5 magnitude earthquake, they said. Several websites and blogs are showing pictures of the landslide. We've linked to some of them on our KHNS News webpage with this report. Brown bears are one of the most intensively studied species in southeast Alaska. Much of the focus is on population management for hunting. But one scientist studies bears for their sake and not ours. Tawny Lewis is a terrestrial wildlife biologist at Glacier Bay National Park. She's made some breakthroughs in both behavior and genetics, and she can't help but sing about it. Robert Woolsey reports from Sitka.
I have to admit that in my years as a reporter, not many stories, well, make that no stories whatsoever, have ever had a banjo component. And it's best not to keep a banjo waiting.
He was strong as the wind and tall as the sweet grass, and his mama had kicked him out of her home, so he had...
But there's more to Tawny Lewis than her banjo. The song is also an important part of her story. We'll get back to it in a moment. When Tawny Lewis started her work in Glacier Bay 13 years ago, there were many instances of not very pretty encounters with the brown bears in the northern part of the bay.
Like 10 to 20 per year of people getting their tents squished, their kayaks trashed.
Lewis says it wasn't a food issue. Campers are required to use bear cans. It seemed to her as if the bears just liked messing with people's gear. She gathered some of the state's top bear experts and came up with a new strategy.
Stand your ground and not let bears destroy your stuff. And we hit that safety message hard, and we continue to. And, you know, last year we had almost no incidents.
This is different from the usual advice about brown bear encounters in the rest of southeast Alaska. Group together, back away slowly is more common. But Glacier Bay is a little bit different, and so are its bears. Besides rewriting the park's bear plan, Lewis is also involved in biological time travel.
It's pretty cool to look at the genetic consequences of the Little Ice Age.
The glacial maximum in southeast Alaska was 18,000 years ago, but the mouth of Glacier Bay opened as recently as 260 years ago. The animals that inhabit the area, biologically speaking, have been isolated in time. By sampling DNA in the fur of brown bears, Lewis has discovered three distinct populations of animals. Bears from the Chilkat region around Haines, bears from the Yakutat forelands, and bears that are unique just to Glacier Bay.
So what that tells us is that this small group that's only found in Glacier Bay is sort of a remnant population, a population that was isolated at some point, most likely from a small number of individuals that underwent genetic drift and isolation and over time developed their own genetic signature. And now bears from the east and the west, since the ice has moved back from other places, they're able to get in there and they're all present in the same areas in northern Glacier Bay.
Lewis says that the Glacier Bay brown bears are smaller than their cousins, bold but not aggressive. Because the land is new, they rely heavily on intertidal areas for food, which is why they so often stroll through the beachfront campgrounds of visitors to the park.
I've just always felt since I've been in Glacier Bay that the brown bears in the deglaciated, recently deglaciated areas are just a little unique. And so it's pretty cool to find it genetically.
Lewis thinks a lot about these bears. She was driving to the university in Fairbanks to defend her dissertation and wrote a song about the two bears who first found each other in one of the small habitable areas of Glacier Bay thousands of years ago. She signed up to sing it at the Fairbanks Folk Festival, where this recording was made. And he woke up alive in the spring. Think of it as an ode to the very large, furry Adam and Eve brown bears of Glacier Bay. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Robert Woolsey for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support. KHNS Local News is your connection to relevant issues and happenings in Haines, Skagway, and Clequan. We also bring you wider-reaching stories from around the region to help our community make connections here and beyond. We do our best to keep you informed, enlightened, and entertained, and we couldn't do it without your support. Thanks for making KHNS News your news.